Go ahead, Madam Chairwoman.
Okay, great. Then I will go ahead and call us to order. Here's your knock. Hope everybody heard that. Evan, I want to thank you and your team by putting together what I think is a really robust outline for the plan. And I think all things considered, when you, the last time you and I spoke about this was sort of pre, I think we were in pandemic, but pre real crisis. So I think this is even more appropriate for us now as we're considering the world we live in. So I want to thank you and your team for all the hard work you put into it. And for, I assume, I know you had planned to talk with most of the members of the committee individually prior to this meeting. And I know I found our conversation very helpful. So with that, I'd love to turn it over to you to kind of walk us through the plan. And then we can certainly address questions and concerns.
Sure. And if I may suggest, I think we do still need to do a roll call.
Yes, forgive me.
Ms. Earhart.
Here.
Delegate Marshall.
Here.
Mr. Blevins.
Here.
Secretary Ball. Delegate Byron. Well, you got a quorum. So now turning to the business of the meeting, I did have a chance to talk with everybody on the phone individually about this document, and so I'll move through it really swiftly because the primary purpose of this call is for you as committee members to be able to talk with each other and for us to have a conversation. But to hit the highlights, we really wanted to take into account two important aspects of where the commission is and where we think the commission needs to be. So focusing first on where the commission is, you know, we continue to have a fairly significant problem with revenues. We are not earning a lot in the treasury, and we're spending a lot because needs are significant. And so the first thing that we tried to do in this document is lay out a future by which we're able to really, you know, the way I characterize it is play a lot more offense. I want to see us bringing resources into the commission. We've done that to a lesser extent with things like revenue sharing, with things like the loans through VRA, which do carry an interest rate. But, you know, there's a lot more that we need to do if we're going to be able to fund commission operations into the future. And there's really two big approaches to getting that funding in. The first is the proposal that we work to create an outside nonprofit entity and that could accept donations and grants. And the second is that we engage in a really dramatic ramping up of lending activity and do that at or only just below market rates. That second piece is a significant departure for the commission, but one, there has been an availability of capital issue. You know, I don't know entirely what's driving that. I suspect a lot of it comes from over-regulation of the banking industry following the 2008 crisis, particularly as it pertains to small and community banks. The other big change that we would, you know, big significant change that we would see in the commission is a change in the way in which we actually operate internally, recognizing that we have reduced funds, at least for the period that would be covered by this document, which is to say the next 2 years. We propose first streamlining the committees, which will force projects that might have been in separate committees into competition with each other. That's been something that it's been difficult for the staff to communicate to commissioners when we've done rounds that were so specific. You know, it's hard for us to say, yes, relative to the other projects before the Southwest Economic Development Committee, this is a relatively good theater renovation. But this theater renovation remains a less good use of resources than would be investment in a shell building or something of that nature. So by streamlining the committees, we can force projects to compete with each other in a way that should be really effective, but that doesn't mean that we'll stop doing the work of the committees that get sort of idled for the time being. And, you know, when I, the second or the third, I guess, big meaty part of this document is the areas of priority, because I do propose that we narrow some of our work there. In particular, you know, we start with business and community lending, then we do workforce and economic education and workforce development, then agribusiness, then trough, then industrial and business infrastructure, then programmatic capacity building and project development. What you'll see left out there is grant making for healthcare entirely. You'll see community development, anything that's community development must be a loan as opposed to a grant. And currently left out is tourism. Now, that's something that I think there'd be some pushback, particularly in Southwest when that's such a growing industry. But I wanted to sort of, you know, that could still be a lending option, but it would no longer be a grant making option. Those are the big departures. I'm happy to walk through the document item by item, but some of the rest of what's there is codification of work that we're already doing or that's already reflected in prior plans. So how do you guys feel about that?
I'm open to other members of the committee too. I would say that we definitely want to walk through in some detail some of the newer. I'm very interested to hear what the committee members think, particularly about the, well, all of it, but the committee piece particularly.
Evan, this is Danny. Let's go to 30,000 feet and look at a timeline of how we're going to roll this out. You know, this is one piece of it that we rolled out to this committee. So what's the next step after that? What's the next step after that? What's the next step after that?
Well, so first, you know, we want to get guidance from this committee. As soon as we get that, what we'll do is we'll beef up the document that you've got in front of you. I mean, what we have right now is there is some, the beginning of the document looks a lot like what it'll look like in final form. But then, you know, the operational pieces we left as an outline because there just isn't any sense doing a bunch of wordsmithing stuff if you guys didn't like it. So we wanted to make sure that that was a direction that the committee wanted to go before we, you know, sort of built out the language around it. The next sort of question would be, once we've got a final, what I can do is, you know, we'll take guidance from you guys today. I'll circulate a document that's more complete to all of you guys for your edits. And we can do that via email. There's no real reason that we would need to do that at, in another call at first. I think we do one more call to get to final, and then we can present that to the May meeting and the commission will adopt it or not. That is a similar process to what we did in the prior strategic planning exercises. The one thing we'll want to do is make sure that we've got this document in a near final form with enough time ahead of the May meeting to accept public comment. I think we want to give our stakeholders an opportunity not to do full-on, I mean, they'd be illegal now anyway, but not to do the full-on kind of stakeholder comment sessions that we've done in the past, but rather to at least weigh in with us in writing about you know, how they feel about our new direction. An important piece of that will be making clear what our current fiscal situation is. I don't think we do a good enough job communicating with our partners that, you know, in the absence of a real plan for fiscal sustainability, the commission would cease to be a usefully operating entity in the next 5 to 10 years. I think a lot of people assume that we just have an endless pot of money.
So, Evan, one of the things that I don't think I heard was the does the plan need to go through the executive committee?
It does not need to. It certainly can. You know, I think at the same time we get the draft out for the for public comment, you know, I would welcome edits and input from commissioners as well. We haven't in the past done it that way. You know, this is a committee like any other, and we can make recommendations from this committee to the full commission.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, so why don't we just start walking through the document? We can go item by item. As I said, the first couple of pages are, you know, frankly, kind of pablum. You know, I will draw your attention to the vision, which was updated a little bit. You know, we started to try to say that the commission's work is grounded in objective and quantifiable economic base analysis, in general, directly productive industries and workforce training and development, which supports them, do more to further that goal and should be favored. And then we make an explicit call out in our vision to ensuring maximum impact through expenditures and the commission's financial sustainability. So those are departures there. Unless anybody has any issues with that, I'm happy to move on to item one, which is our new structural approach. All right, hearing none. First, we come to the streamlined committees. I outlined kind of the reasoning behind that, but you know, to restate it really briefly, when we split the pot too many ways, we tend to there's not enough money to do significant projects. And here, 1 second, guys, I apologize, but I think give me one moment. My wife's about to overwater some. Sorry, I asked her if she could handle that today while I was on a call, and then my last call ended early and I got to it. So sorry about that. These are strange days. In addition to worrying about splitting the pot too many ways, though, there is real advantage to having different sorts of projects have to compete against each other. And by streamlining down to a Southside committee, a Southwest committee, and an education committee, which would be our grant-making and lending committees, we really pull all our projects together. Now, that Southside and Southwest committee would not be the current Southside and Southwest Economic Development Committee. These would now become, you know, basically just two versions of special projects in that, you know, they'll hear everything that is sensible that doesn't fit into the education category. And I think that makes a lot of sense for us, particularly in the near term, because we'll be able to have two committees that can take on a lot of different work and still have healthy budgets that they can do granting. And I would see probably each committee meeting, I would say probably one committee in the summer, one committee in the fall, and then both committees in the winter, you know, to finish up any needs that surfaced over the course of the year. And then we can sort of...
So, Evan, let me ask a question about the two committees. Do you foresee, as membership of the Southwest Committee and membership of the Southside Committee, that all commissioners from Southside would be on the Southside Committee and all commissioners from the Southwest would be on the Southwest Commission, and then a few would be on Education Committee?
I actually am not sure. I know in particular that a set of commissioners will be really interested in staying on the committee that represents their region. But in a lot of ways, I actually think it would be better and lead to more objectivity if we kind of reversed it. If there were a lot of Southwest folks on the Southside committee and vice versa, because it lends objectivity. if you're no longer talking about your community. But that said, you know, I'd let, as we do with committees now, by and large, we let folks pursue their interests and inclinations. We want to make sure that we had expertise balanced across both committees. So, you know, to the extent that we collapse the R&D and agribusiness committees into these committees, we still want to make sure that we have folks who know what they're talking about in the agribusiness space and know what they're talking about on infrastructure and R&D, you know, and have some experience there on both sides.
Well, my only thought is that, you know, I think that if some members are not on a committee, then we're going to have problems with the quorum. And I think that, I think one of the reasons the Tobacco Commission is so successful is because the involvement of its members.
I agree. And you know, I'll be honest. I'm not entirely wedded to the specific committee structure that's been described here. So, you know, if this committee wants to move in a different direction, and whether that's, you know, maintaining one additional committee or creating very explicit subcommittees that, you know, are designed to work in tandem with the other committees, you know, I think that's fine. What I wanted to do, though, was push projects together to the greatest extent possible, as well as, you know, really try to ensure that we weren't dividing our pot up into too many different pieces.
Evan, this is Ansel Evans. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, are there thoughts from other committee members?
This is Ed Blevins. I see the objective there with the streamlining, and I think that is probably a good direction. But I think it's also very important that we go to whatever lengths we need to have a balance there on those committees to make sure that the areas affected have a voice, you know, and are able to interact, and it kind of goes along with what Danny said. I think we need input from particularly the commissioners that have been involved in some of the committees that we're eliminating, and I just think it's critical that we have a balance there on those proposed new committees.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
And Ed, sorry, just to be clear, you're saying a balance, a geographic balance on those committees?
Yes. Okay. But again, I see the benefit of objectivity by having overlap between the two regions, South Side and Southwest. But I also think we need to be very cautious about having input from the local areas there that are affected.
All right, so this is Danny. Let me bring up one thing that's going to be brought up. Tommy Wright's going to bring this up, is when the commission was first started, long before I was there, that if my number's going to be close, that it was originally set up that 70% of the funding was going to be at Southside and 30% in Southwest. And the reason it was done like that, so I have been told 10 times from Sunday from Tommy, is because that is amount of tobacco that was grown and sold in Southside versus Southwest. And I know we got two new members on this call that maybe have heard that, maybe have not heard that.
Well, the thing I'll say is, you know, I like Tommy a lot, and Tommy's a great guy. But like any other body, whether it's a board or a legislature, the actions of past membership can't bind the future membership. This commission could decide to say, we're going to spend all our money in Dickinson County, and that just is the way it is. You know, I don't think you'd see a lot of support for that proposal, but it is certainly something that we could do. And so I don't think we're obliged to stick to that divide, particularly now when we are 20 years out from the original economic situation that we were in at the beginning. You know, the economy has changed a lot. And so, you know, I think it's incumbent upon us to continue to meet the challenges of today's economy. And moreover, you know, when you look at the economy of the region, you've got, you know, we didn't just lose tobacco. We lost textiles, we lost furniture. We're in the process of losing coal. It's a long process, but it's happening. And so, you know, we got to meet all those needs. So I think we should certainly acknowledge that. And the, you know, my argument would be, in part because, you know, I don't want, it'd violate the governor's order if a bunch of y'all showed up from Southside with torches and pitchforks. You know, we're not suggesting that we eliminate the accumulated allocation in the Southside budget that exists there, which is like $22 million right now. I think that's enough of a kind of a holdover of that preference for Southside that, you know, it would make sense to me. Well, first, it would make sense to me, I'll say this again, I failed in this. This is the one thing that Carthen tried and failed at, Neil tried and failed at, I tried and failed at, and both of them told me not to bother, but I did anyway. To eliminate the allocation formula in Southside, if we just put that into one central pot and took on projects as they came, we'd be able to take on a lot better projects and do more for Eastern Southside. But, you know, I'm kind of done having that fight unless it's something that you guys want to take on.
We don't want to take that fight off. I spoke from someone who has the two of the highest allocations.
All right. Well, so how do y'all feel about this committee breakdown? You know, we just have these four. Do you want to do a different version of it? Do we want to call them something different so there's a cleaner break from the prior economic development committees? You know, we could even change our regions, though I think that would confuse people more than is necessary and would force us to redo our logo.
One of the things that Alexis, that Evan and I talked about was originally those committees still had economic development in them, and we talked about taking that out so that they would be sort of quasi-special projects committees and people would recognize them as being broader than economic development.
So, Alexis, you'd have a Southside special project and a Southwest special project?
Oh, forgive me. I wasn't implying that we use special projects. I was just referencing Evan's comment that essentially that's what they become, right? Because it's sort of a hybrid or taking on a, you know, a variety of projects that come our way exclusive of education.
Well, originally special projects was for localities that did not get a large allocation. That again, before my time, am I correct, Evan?
That was an eligible use of special projects. It was also for the, you know, the big regional project, the things like the mega parks. And I actually think initially some of the broadband funding went through special projects before R&D existed.
Right. So back to the question, should we, I talked to Kathy Byard yesterday and I thought she'd have been on the call today. But she called me and we talked about if you had a Southside and Southwest, you know, looking at like the General Assembly, you know, Kathy and I and Kilgore on a committee called Labor and Commerce. That's a full committee. But we have, I guess, maybe three or four subcommittees under there. Subcommittees do kind of most of the work. So you could do this similar situation where you could have a special projects or another one under Southside, same thing as Southwest, they would meet and report to the full committee, and then the full committee reports to the board.
And we could certainly do that. You know, I think we can create subcommittees if we like. You know, that cuts against the idea of pulling projects together, but to compete against each other. But it doesn't necessarily, as long as the subcommittees meet prior to the full committee, right? So if you had subcommittees approve a set of, if we didn't give the subcommittees individual budgets and they just approved projects to sort of come before the full committee, and then the full committee still had to, you know, make decisions about what to fund and what not to fund, we could do both.
And I understand the issue that you're trying to deal with is to try to keep people from, and I'm guilty of it, I've done it before, you know, trying to keep home cooking and trying to convince members that, you know, that staff got it wrong and we needed to fund this. And so I understand where you're going from.
Yeah. I mean, that has been an issue in the past, and it's one that I'm, you know, I'm committed to helping the commission overcome. I think it is in the commission's interest to move past that issue in operations. All right. So unless somebody has a specific change they want to make, we'll move on. This next one, I think also, you know, that's a good segue, Danny, into the next piece, which is professionalization of the commission's work. The theory here is to raise the bar for deviations from staff recommendations. And here I think we should actually make a note. I think this came up, Danny, either in my call with you or Alexis in my call with you. Rather than have there be a supermajority required at the committee level, we could just do one at the full commission, which, you know, is more in keeping with the way the legislature does it. But, you know, what do you guys, and we could also make it so that it would merely the supermajority is for a deviation from the yes, no aspect of it, but that the commission could still tailor conditions at its discretion without the requirement for a supermajority.
And Evan, I think we did talk about that.
Yeah, and Evan, we did talk about that also.
So what do folks think?
I think a supermajority will have you looked at the actual votes to see in past if this would have made a difference or not?
I haven't done any kind of organized survey of previous votes. I also think, though, you know, there hasn't been as much push to, you know, try to gin up no votes outside of a couple of specific instances. Because, you know, once I know that there's no chance we're going to get a majority of no's, you know, I kind of stop politicking. It's not worth, you know, running around trying to make it a 40 to 60 loss instead of a 20 to 80 loss. A loss is a loss.
Evan, this
well,
is
it, would change, to... it would change the game. Excuse me, Evan.
No, go ahead, Danny. I'm sorry.
No, I just said it would change the dynamics of it changes the rule of the game, and so I guess we don't know what we don't know about that.
Right, and all of this is subject to revision.
Go ahead, Evan.
You know, we can certainly this is a we do this exercise every other year, but there's no law that says we can only do it every other year. So if we try something and it doesn't work, you know, I'm all for, you know, trying out ideas, and then when they work, great, and when they don't, we come up with something else.
Well,
All right. Well, so no significant pushback on that so far. That's surprising, but great. The next big piece is the explicit decision to create an outside nonprofit to fund our education and talent attraction work. The theory behind that, as I've laid out for each of you, is that, you know, that is the kind of work that's very attractive to charitable funders and grant makers. And I believe we could get a pretty talented and well-connected development person. And we, you know, we have the resources to pay them commensurate with their talent level. And so we could certainly do that in a way that would allow us to raise a lot of funds. And that's just another area we can kind of play offense, is the way I've been characterizing it. So one thing, we would need legislation. You know, I'm exploring a little bit whether or not we could make that amendment, but I think that's probably going to be too tough in this current environment. But we could take it on next year in whatever sort of the nature of, you know, we know there's going to be some kind of change proposed to the commission in the coming legislative session. We don't know what that's going to be yet, and I think that we need to stay engaged on that, but we'll find out. What do folks think?
I think it's worth pursuing. I think that, you know, we have some success stories. Again, back to Danville Community Colleges, at the Institute, the Precision Machining. I think that we have been successful with those. I'm sure there's other success stories than the ones I know of.
I shared this with Evan when we spoke, but one of the reasons I like the idea is that I think it makes the case to those, frankly, who are newer in the General Assembly or for whatever reason, less familiar with the work of the commission. I think it helps to make the case that there are other efforts to raise money, that not simply relying on commission funds, which frankly we are entitled to do. But I think this is a good faith effort that we want to have the commission in perpetuity doing good work in the footprint.
Yeah, good point.
Kathy just texted me. Let me send her the call-in information. I agree with that, and I think it's, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to get an awful lot done. And really, you know, make us some money, frankly. We could fund a lot of our education work in that way. You know, and by pushing that off budget, it means there's more money for the other programs, and it's more money coming into the commission. And I'd love to see someday that foundation be a major player throughout the region. And it's something that we could really do. But again, it'll be a challenge in the current legislative environment. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on. We've got the improved fiscal management piece. One, you know, we did this in the last strategic plan, but I think we can be more forceful this time about not just a goal of sustainability, but a plan to get there. And, you know, that starts with saying, you know, we did our 4% corpus invasion this year. We can do that again in the coming year, but then saying we're going to decline to 3%, then 2%, then 1%, so that by 2024, we are at, you know, true fiscal sustainability. That really needs to dovetail with ideally both, but at least one of the foundation and the significant foray into lending. Absent that, if we just try to live on the interest earnings from the treasury, that'll be very small budgets. And so the the whole idea here is, you know, we can sort of maintain effort in the current year. There probably will be a dip in 21 and 22. In particular, 22 will probably be a lean year because we won't have gotten a ton of our loan earnings back in, nor will we have raised a boatload of money to the foundation, probably, though you never know. But by 23 and 24, when we are reducing our corpus invasion to 1% and then 0%, we should have made a significant number of loans that are yielding significantly increased interest relative to what they were making in the treasury. And some of those loans will have been short-term loans that will have come back and gone back out. So we'll have a lot out in the field that would be making money. And that'll be a couple years into a development associate working on raising money. And so, you know, that always takes a little while to get off the ground. But, you know, I think if we hire somebody who's really good, that can lead to, you know, really, really, really strong outcomes. I mean, you think about, now obviously this is a little different, but you think about the fact that UVA can go on multi-billion dollar capital campaigns. We don't need anything like that. And there sure are a lot of people who care about workforce development and service to our region and care about rural America generally. You know, I think about some of these big charitable foundations. I think they would love to see our talent attraction program be more aggressive and widespread. And I think, you know, we could work really closely with the community colleges to build up the competitive education funds as well. So there's a lot of opportunity to do great stuff in that space. But, you know, there, what do people think about this explicit plan for financial sustainability within 5 years?
Evan, this is Ed Blevins. I think that you were right in saying that we do need a plan, and I think this is a viable plan. I think the opportunities through the foundation are definitely significant, but I also think that there's probably a tremendous opportunity from the lending portfolio aspect, particularly for localities. And you know, I in my world of commercial lending and agricultural lending, I could right off the bat see opportunities that would probably be available for lending, and I think that is a good opportunity.
Danny, I know you can't speak for all the legislators on the commission, but how does this give you any heartburn, or are you comfortable with that?
No, I think it's just the opposite. I think it gives us a, you know, I have always said that I did not want to be on the commission the last year we ran out of money. So I think this gives just the opposite of that. It gives us a path that we can build forward to, you know, for generations.
Excellent.
All right. The next piece is asset management. This is something that we're doing anyway as a staff, but the real key is, you know, I think it'll elevate it by putting it in the strategic plan. You know, we've got property interests in land and buildings and equipment across the footprint, millions and millions and millions of dollars of property. We're not doing anything with that. Now, I don't know exactly what we can do with it, but the first thing that we need to do is catalog all of it. The second thing we need to do is record liens on all the pieces of it that are over a specific value. We threw out $100,000. That looks to be the right number, but we certainly drop it to 50. And then the third thing is figure out whether or not there's any way to leverage this portfolio of assets. I think there probably is, but I couldn't say for sure. And you know, that comes after we would get a complete accounting of it done anyway. So what do you guys think about that?
That'll get Byron during the call just a moment ago.
Excellent. Hey, Kathy. Maybe on mute, Kathy. Anyway, we are on the document I sent out. We are on 2C or 2B.
2B. Yeah, it doesn't look like the little phone option is on yet for her, so she's probably dialing in.
Gotcha. All right. Well, so not a lot of talk about that, so we'll move on. Focus on lending. You know, this we've talked about a little bit, but, you know, we're going to dive in here. The theory here is that we still have significant capital. So this year, by doing our full corpus invasion in pursuit of the partnership investment strategy, which, you know, and I told you guys, I don't mind trying new ideas, and that, you know, it's okay when they don't work out. The partnership investment strategy is not working out well. I had high hopes for it, and I think we're going to wind up getting across the finish line with Virginia Community Capital. But, you know, it's the remainder of the funds are there. So we've got, you know, we've got $18 to $25 million that we could put on the street right now. If we do that full corpus invasion again next year, it's probably going to yield us between $20 and $25 million. It depends on how, you know, earnings and some other things turn out. And so the idea is, over the course of this coming 5-year period, when we're trying to transition to full sustainability, we can probably lend $100-odd million, which at, you know, 5%, that's bringing in an extra $5 million a year. You know, and then relative to business as usual, it's bringing in an extra $4 million. And if rates go up, which they are likely to do in this space, then we can talk about even more funds coming in through that. So, you know, there's an opportunity for us to leverage our money in a really significant way while still meeting a significant community and business need. But what do you guys think about this? You know, this is a big part of this plan. And so, you know, if we're not all on the same page, then I think, you know, we need to rethink the approach.
So my concern is a government entity competing against a private sector.
Yeah, I hear you on that, and I think the way that we can alleviate that concern is to find the folks who are not currently able to do to be served through the commercial banking space. And we can do that a couple of different ways. You know, one thing we can do is, you know, not undercut the commercial banks on rates. And so, you know, if we're not offering a significantly better interest rate than is a commercial bank, then there's no particular reason to deal with us and all of the attendant headaches of a government entity relative to a commercial bank that, you know, there's a private transaction between you and your banker. The second thing we can do is try to ensure that, you know, we can even set it as a gatekeeping mechanism. We could say, if you don't, you need to try and get turned down by a bank before you come to us. That's another approach we could take. But I also think, you know, what I've seen, at least anecdotally, is there are a lot of people who already have banking relationships who go to those banks and aren't successful in getting access to capital before they pick up the phone and call me or call their attorney and ask them what the Commonwealth can do. And so, you know, I think there's a gap that we'd be filling that wouldn't be directly competitive with the commercial banking sector.
I think that's the key. And Evan, I know you and I talked about that, because that was a question I had. Was, again, you know, I don't live in the space like others do in the lending space, but why duplicate? And I think what you had articulated to me was that gap piece, that we're really looking for folks who can't access funds in other ways, or have tried and not been successful. For obviously, we want to make good loans, but that we were really filling the gap here as opposed to duplication. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, on top of that, there are a large, you know, you think about what BCETA does, for example. You know, they're not really competing with commercial banks, a lot of the folks they make loans to are really not bankable, you know? So if it's Spearhead Trails or it's a new hotel or some other sort of project that, you know, for one reason or another, it's just tough for them to access capital. We could certainly do that provided we've got enough value on the other side to collateralize it.
So Evan, I'm on Virginia Housing Commission, and so VHDA, Virginia Housing Development Authority, comes before us all the time. And one of the things they have told us many, many times is they make bad loans. It is not they're not underwritten, or the full backing of the state government is not behind them. In this case, if we do this and we make bad loans, does the Commonwealth of Virginia give us full backing on this, or are we on our own?
Well, so a debt to a state agency, you know, we can employ the Attorney General's office to collect that debt. So that would be an option that's available to us. The thing that I would have us do, though, is ensure that we either had, you know, full or over collateralization of any loan that we made, or a guarantee from the locality, so that, you know, we could be confident that we were not going to be in a situation where the taxpayers had just lost money.
Well, let's go back a year. If we'd have done this last year, we would have, you know, had some loans out. You know, November, December of last year, there were some really strong private companies out there that you don't know if they're going to survive right now with the crazy world we're living in. And so, you know, we don't know what the future brings. And so would we be had the backing of the government if our loans went belly up? I know you'd have the Attorney General to go out and collect it, try to collect that money, but if the money's uncollectible, what happens?
Well, so that would be where we'd get the benefit of either a local guarantee or the collateral. So the other benefit that we have being a state agency is we've got the General Services Administration, which is routinely in the process of selling off surplus state government equipment, property, buildings, etc. That makes it relatively easy for us to go ahead and enforce our lien, gather the capital, gather the collateral, rather, and sell it to get back our money. And if that doesn't work, then, you know, if we have a guarantee instead of a collateralized loan, then we work out a payment plan with the guarantor, whether it's an IDA or an EDA or the county or whomever.
So I heard something new then. So what a guarantee would be almost like a trough?
Yes.
So a local company would come, they would have to get a guarantee from their
local. Or offer us collateral or some other form of security that was adequate, a letter of credit or a performance bond, something like that.
Okay.
So we'd be really working on minimizing our risk. And so one of the things that we focus on is ensuring that we had, access to these other forms of value that could get us our money back if the thing went belly up.
Yeah. So, Ed, Ed, go ahead. I was going to put you on the spot.
Okay. Go ahead and put me on the spot.
So in your world, what do you think of this?
Well, I've listened to your comments and listened to Evan's comments. You know, to address one question you raised about competing with other lenders, I think there would be opportunities for participation with other lenders in this lending world that we're talking about. And you know, I think we could use moral obligations from localities as a risk mitigation tool. You know, I can't help but think that there's opportunity here by engaging in participation with other lenders and using moral obligations. You have to keep in mind, though, that you look really, really good when you make a loan to get a business or started or help a locality grow, but when you have to collect it, you don't look as good. So, that's always a risk with lending, and we need to keep that in mind. And I think we really need to put a lot of time and effort into our underwriting guidelines and our what our appetite for risk is going to be.
Yeah, I agree. To my mind, the most important piece of this would be how we actually construct the loan portion, and we'd want to do that. And we're explicit in this document that we'd want to engage with our partners who have specific expertise. That we would not, you know, we wouldn't kind of just do this by the seat of our pants. All right, well, if there's no more conversation about that, the next piece is just sort of noting the fiscal side of the development strategy into the nonprofit. And so that's something that we can, we've talked about. The next step is investing in the regions. And so this is something that we have talked about a fair amount. The key aspect to this strategy is really recognizing that Sarah Capps and Sarah Williams have more and deeper expertise in economic development efforts in Southern and Southwest Virginia than anybody else in the world, save maybe Stephen Verson and Shannon Blevins. But frankly, I'd stack Sarah and Sarah up against either of them any day of the week. They are already doing, when they have spare time or when they really care about a project development and advising. The thing that they are not doing, though, is that's always kind of a gold star, okay, you added a lot of value here thing, but it hasn't ever been a mainline portion of their jobs. And what we would do by putting it in the strategic plan is say, we are going to carve out explicitly a piece of our regional grant staff's time to work with local leaders and civic leaders to develop new projects. And that, you know, Sarah and Sarah are very enthusiastic about that. This is also an opportunity for us to leverage their expertise and their connection to the rest of state government to add a lot of value without writing a lot of checks. And so that's another sort of piece of this that we really like. And then the final bit of it is we will need to change the, as a part of this, change the bylaws. The way the bylaws are written right now, which makes a lot of sense for what they were trying to do, it says, you know, I report to the commission, all the staff reports to me. I think that's the proper arrangement. But each department head, if I want to hire or fire for those positions, I need to get commission approval. I think that makes sense. They're big parts of the organization. You guys should be engaged in that. But the way it was drafted in the bylaws merely says anybody with director in their title. Well, you know, Sarah and Sarah have staff that directly reports to them. They're in remote locations. They're going to be taking on more leadership positions here. And so what I would like to do is change our bylaws to just say those three positions, the deputy director, the grants program director, and the finance director, the commission approves hiring and firing decisions. But for but that's it, so that we can elevate Sarah and Sarah to be Southside and Southwest regional directors. I think they deserve it. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Evan, as you know, we talked about this. I agree with all of that. Can you talk a little bit about a question I had when we first spoke, was the capacity issue? So if we are going to be encouraging them to kind of take on more and do some different things, is there a capacity issue, and how do we fill that from a staff perspective?
So I don't believe there's a capacity issue currently. Hit a capacity issue with this, a thing we could do, when we originally hired Jesse and Michelle, who are the assistants in the Southside and Southwest offices, they were really doing administrative tasks. But as the work has grown, they've really sort of taken on the same effort as Sarah and Sarah, obviously reviewed by Sarah and Sarah. We could wind up seeing a need to bring in somebody to truly be an admin, because they don't really have that now. But I would see doing that at no more than 15 or 20 hours a week in the field offices. And that would again be, I think for the value we would generate relative to the cost, we'd be talking about, including benefits, maybe $50,000 in each office. That's, if we can generate good projects or generate more value than that by freeing up 15 hours a week of Sarah and Sarah's time, I think that's a good investment. But I also think we can run it a year and see if we get there. Both Sarah and Sarah really love this side of the work, and I think there's a reasonably good chance that they wind up taking it on as a labor of love, and it doesn't necessarily lead to a reduction in their other work.
Okay, thank you.
Evan, this is Danny. Southside, sir, Southwest, sir, would their part of their job is to coordinate their efforts through the local economic development offices, if there are one, like Pennsylvania County or Danville. Would they work through those offices, or either with Linda Green, or are they a kind of a free agent out trying to get existing businesses to expand, or how do you see that?
I think it'd be much more working with existing folks. So, they've got the relationships that they've got, and I think what they'd be able to do is talk to Linda or Matt or whomever, and learn what projects are out there, who's thinking about things. And that's not just on the economic development project side either. That's also if IALR wants to take something on, or if UVA Wise wants to take something on, or the city of Bristol. There's going to be a lot of stuff in and about these casinos, and there's going to need to be a lot of work done to figure out how we best take advantage of building a tourism economy around them. Those are all things where, I think it makes sense for us to, if there's going to be I hope there are committees set up to try to take maximum advantage of these new casinos. I think it makes sense for Sarah Capps to be sitting on that committee as a part of her job in Southside. And I think it makes sense for Sarah Williams to be sitting on that committee as a part of her job in Southwest. And I think we should be explicit about that, because we want to know what's going on. And again, they have the expertise to really push those committees in good directions.
So, Evan, so a Danville, Pennsylvania County, maybe a Henry County, and even maybe a Halifax County, they have all dedicated economic developers. But some localities, that economic developer, wears a couple of different hats. And so I could see really a Sarah, a Southside Sarah, could work with the county manager to facilitate, help bring businesses into those areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I would, to a certain extent, leave it up to them. You know, some of this time will be taken up by the new Southside program, but, or Small Towns program, rather. Some of this, you know, the idea is to leave some flexibility so that they can take on the projects that they see coming across their desks that would seem to add the most value, as well as you know, have the highest impact. And so that, to me, is the right approach, is to, if we're elevating their expertise, it's to trust their expertise in terms of project development to focus on the highest impact projects or the places where they can add the most value.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Danny, I appreciate your question. And Evan, I agree. I think we need to be explicit about not specific in terms, we don't want to get in the weeds on the responsibilities or how they operate, but being explicit about the role, because I think right now we're very fortunate in that both Sarahs are team players. They have their respective regions. They sort of put that above and beyond everything. And while I wouldn't anticipate the commission having someone who didn't operate that way, we can't always predict the future. And so I just think being explicit about how we're a good partner and working with existing partners is really important. I just think there's too much of, sometimes that doesn't go well. So I'd like to do everything we could to avoid that in a potential future scenario.
I agree. And I've got that down.
So if you look at the model of Joe Anwal, I mean, that's what Joe does, is, you know, he brings those clients from the UK, et cetera, to the local economic developers. So that works well. So Sarah could somewhat follow that same model.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference would be, mm-hmm. you know, we wouldn't have Sarah out beating the bushes like Joe does. You know, it'd be more once something has landed in the footprint, making sure it gets across the finish line, whether that's a new business or whether that's a new project at a community college or whether that's a regional agribusiness proposal. Those kind of things are where we're, I don't know that we'd be sending Sarah. I wouldn't recommend sending Sarah and Sarah, you know, out to take corporate meetings and those sorts of things.
Evan, this is Ed Blevins. I definitely think we could better utilize the resources we have with Southwest Sarah in this capacity. I think that's a tremendous resource that could be better utilized. I think this is good.
Well, excellent. Moving on, the next piece is the regional marketing and development efforts. This is not anything new. This is just about, you know, we've got Will Payne in Southwest and Joe Anwal as in Southside. And, you know, I think that we, you know, those guys are working with us. They've got contracts. But, you know, as we saw with Joe Anwal in the past, he got caught up in a different grant issue and he wasn't clear that we were going to keep working with him. And, you know, we want them to feel secure. And so I think explicitly saying that we're going to remain in contract with these people as long as the commission continues to approve their work, will give them some comfort and make clear that the commission is behind these efforts long term, or at least for the 2 years that this strategic plan is in force. This last piece is the areas of priority, and this is an area where, you know, we did this in our last strategic plan. I've got these in kind of order of priority. I'm open to changes, but, you know, we really say, look, business and community lending is going to be the largest per dollar activity of the commission, so it's our top priority. Following behind that is education and workforce development, and we break that out into three categories we currently have, which is competitive education grant making, which is capital grants to our institutions of higher learning. It's talent attraction, which is where we're paying student loans for folks to come and live and work in the footprint. And then finally, it's workforce financial aid, wherein we are making it less costly to attend community colleges. The next sector that I think we should, the next priority should be agribusiness. I think we've underinvested in agribusiness in the past. I would like us to focus on systemic and value added as a, over research and individual processor benefit. You know, I think there's a there are a lot of programs out there to help, you know, in the research space, particularly at the federal level. I don't know that that was as good an investment on our part in the past. Next would be trough. The one behind that would be industrial and business infrastructure. This is broadband, mega sites, shell buildings. And then finally would be programmatic capacity building and problem and project development. These would be small dollar investments, things like when in a project, Sarah Capps or Sarah Williams, and I'm thinking about our small towns program here, you know, if we find out that Cambridge can't afford to do the DHCD community business launch because they don't have, you know, they can't free up $20,000 for match. Well, you know, Sarah can recommend that the commission fund that and we could certainly do it. And that would be kind of a high impact thing, but it's last on our list because I think it would be the lowest dollar. So how does that list strike y'all?
Evan, are they in any particular order?
I have them in my recommended order, from highest to lowest, A to F, but you know, it's up to you guys.
They need to be in order. I mean, areas of priority without specifying, you know, they're just.
They certainly don't need to be. We have put them in order in the past. And I think sometimes it's helpful, particularly if we've got people who are comparing projects that fall into different categories, to know that the commission has made a decision about what's higher priority and what's not. But you know, at the same time, it's still, you know, a great project that's a lower priority should still probably take precedence over a so-so project that's a higher priority. So I don't know that there's necessarily a ton of value in being explicit that this is from highest priority to lowest priority.
Well, we haven't really experienced the business community lending yet. So I just have some concern about some of these that are still being developed, some that are already something we're quite familiar with, that by prioritizing them, you know, unless we're trying to send messages out again that maybe that's not necessary at this point. Maybe it's the uncertainty right now that many of us are feeling, but just have some concerns about that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, you know, I'm not, as I said, I'm not wedded to the idea of having them be in priority order.
And you don't say, unless I'm missing it, Evan, you don't say explicitly they're in order of priority, which gives a little, I mean, not to be intentionally, you know, covert in any way, but people may assume that, but you don't affirm it in the text.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
I mean, people could assume that. I have a question, and I don't even know if it's possible. I just know that we're having lots of discussions in our region and the funding community about pivoting. I know Go Virginia is thinking about, in the current crisis, you know, what can we do to support particularly small businesses. I'm not suggesting that we put it in the strategic plan because it's shorter term and operational, but what I was going to say, what I like about this order is it does allow some, if we wanted to take steps to in recovery efforts for businesses, particularly come fall, God willing, it gives us some leeway to do that if there were something innovative that we wanted to do in that space.
Yeah, certainly. And we can also, you know, we can move faster. I do worry about the, well, it's a different conversation. I worry that some of the COVID responses that we're seeing are responsive, are people being responsive to the need to quote unquote do something rather than people being deeply thoughtful about whether or not what they're doing is the smartest thing. But
I couldn't agree more. And that's why I think our timeline will be better suited Because businesses don't know what they need right now for recovery. They know what they need today.
Right.
So I like our timeline here.
Well, so is there anything we're missing? I mean, explicitly not in here, as you know, I think it's worth noting the things that are not covered in B through F would mean that they're not eligible for grants. And so they'd be loan candidates only. You know, which would leave out some projects that we've done in the past, things like tourism projects, things like, you know, grants to hotels. Now, you know, I tend to think those were not some of our higher impact grants, but, you know, we should be clear about that.
But that's grants, not loans, right? So we could do a loan to a hotel.
We certainly could.
Evan, my question is, and I may have missed this, I got late on the call, and if so, we can discuss that offline later. But I'm just, you know, really wondering, what's your goal lines and what is the, I mean, did this just happen to get mixed in with a pandemic or already in the focus? Or, you know, is there a, you know, we still have to get back together and discuss it?
So the lending has been on the horizon for a while. That it was not driven by the pandemic, though, you know, I think the pandemic helps make the case for it a little bit. Really, the idea behind the lending is, you know, I tried to, oftentimes you're working on something and it's hard to kind of see above the bushes. I tried to step back and take a broader look, and it started just with the thought, you know, if I knew that I didn't want to just spend the money, if I wanted the money to last, and I knew that I wanted to support economic development and growth, if I had $400 million, what would I do? And what do people do? And the answer is, they lend it. And so you combine that thought with the recognition that there is an access to capital problem in our footprint, and that we need to raise more revenue. And I think the argument for making loans just grows from there.
And your response to the goal, I mean, when is the, when is your hopes of getting this completed?
I think we could, if this plan is approved in the May meeting, whatever form that takes, I think we could, depending on how much other stuff got in the way and how swiftly partners could move, I think we could have, at the outside, we'd have all of the guidelines for the lending program ready for you guys by the December meeting, but I think it's very likely we could have it by the September meeting. And in fact, I bet we could have it even sooner than that if we wanted to do a special meeting. You know, not that there are a lot of silver linings to this pandemic, but the fact that we've opened up the open meetings rules to permit some of these remote meetings actually does make it a lot easier to get the commission together, because, you know, dialing into a conference call is just a much lighter lift than traveling somewhere. So we can get votes on things more swiftly, particularly if we discover in late summer, for example, that there's a real need for us to be lending this money out more swiftly.
So
All right. Well, so that's the whole shebang. You guys have any other thoughts? I've got a little more time, but I do have a call at 1:30.
Evan, is there anything you want to add as we move forward in the process, or any ways that we can be helpful?
The first thing is, as soon as we get out of here, we're going to start adding some language, taking this from an outline form and turning it into a real plan. When we send those versions out, I know it's not any fun, but, to the extent you guys can turn around any edits you have back to us, that's really helpful. We've all been in this document for a while, and it's just the easiest thing in the world to read right past typos or to not recognize that a sentence that you wrote doesn't fully capture the idea that you're trying to, because you already know the idea. And so you guys' outside input just in making the document better is tremendously valuable. And then also catching things we miss, because there will be items we miss or ways we'll phrase things that'll have unintended consequences. And we should be careful about that, because once we adopt the strategic plan, we're bound by it.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't know who doesn't think that's fun, but I will definitely be happy to proof away. Any other? Go ahead.
Yeah, Evan, at some point, I missed the beginning part, so I'm not sure what the consensus, if there was any, on the meeting changes, the makeup of the committees or not, but that was something I was certainly interested in that we can talk about.
Yeah, Kathy, why don't I can schedule a call just to brief you on the first half of the meeting.
Part. I missed that. I came on when you were talking about lending.
Okay. Well, that's easy then. We can find 20 or 30 minutes to chat later in the week.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Evan, is there any other official business before we adjourn?
No. I think this is I'm encouraged that you guys seem to appreciate the work that staff has put into this and the direction we're laying out. This is going to be a change in the way the commission operates on some level. But in another, it's a new way to try to stay true to our core mission. And that's really the way we've approached it the whole time, and hopefully where we're going to end up. So thank you guys very much for your time and attention. I really appreciate that all of you have engaged with the document and thought about it.
Yeah, this is Danny. Before we leave, if I can make just a brief comment. I know this is kind of uncharted work terms that we're living in now, but this is the first conference call I've been on where it's been a back and forth. Most of them have been almost like a lecture. I'm just sitting there listening to someone else tell me information, but it's a little awkward. As opposed to sitting across the table from someone. And I guess we'll get a little bit better at this as we go forward. Hopefully we don't have to, go too much farther forward. But it was just a little awkward for me.
Yeah, I think it does help. If you guys are in front of your computers, Andy and I are the only ones who did the video. I do think it helps a little bit, because there is a lot of communicating that people do with their facial expressions and body language that partially comes through when you do the video chat. So I found, I'm doing 5 or 6 of these a day. And when people are in the video chat, it does work better.
I agree. And I apologize that I couldn't be. My internet is back working, in case anyone's interested. Danny, you'll be interested in that. but I agree with you, Evan. I'm on pretty much all day and the video is fantastic.
And whoever owns the Zoom Corporation, this is the best thing that ever happened to their business.
Yep.
Well, you know, it's rumored that they invented the virus.
It would have been the best business move anybody'd ever made.
Some of this, Evan, quite frankly, you just don't want to see it certain times of the day.
No.
I think that's all of us. I did have a meeting earlier in the week, or I guess it would have been last week, that was at 9 a.m. and I didn't realize it was a video call. And, you know, I just dialed in audio and they're like, oh, where are you? Like, oh, guys. Okay, well, thank you guys very much. And keep your eyes peeled in the next week or so for the updated version of this document.
That sounds great. Evan, thanks to you and your team for all your work. We appreciate
it, too.
Thanks.
I stay healthy.
Bye. You too. Bye.